Welcome back to Integrated Rehabilitation Group Health Matters. Maury Eskenazi, Shannon O'Kelly with us from the Western Washington Medical Group to talk about diabetes. It's a big thing right now, especially people our age.
You hear it all the time, don't
people,
you?
I think it's people every age, but welcome, Dr. David Lindstrom. Welcome.
Thank you.
What is type 2 diabetes?
Well, type 2 diabetes is basically a disease where the body doesn't process sugar appropriately. It can be for a variety of reasons, but most the two big ones is one, you don't make enough insulin. Insulin is a hormone that allows us to regulate sugar. And the other is that the body doesn't use the insulin it has effectively. So an example, if you want to think of it this way, if you think of a hallway, like in a school, for example, with classrooms, that would be like the bloodstream. And the classrooms would be the cells. And the students would be sort of sugar molecules. And in order for things to work the best, the students have to be in the classrooms. The sugar has to get into the cells. The doors to the rooms would be like insulin receptors. And I guess you could say the teachers patrolling the hallways would be like insulin. If you don't have enough teachers, the kids kind of mingle in the hallway and it causes problems. Or if you don't have enough room to get through the doors, then same problem arises. So you can fix that by either increasing the amount of insulin you have, increasing the teacher surveillance, or opening the doors and making sure they get into class so things work properly.
So the bottom line is your body just doesn't have the ability to get sugars into the cells where it can be used for energy.
Correct. So you have insulin receptors in fat cells, in muscle cells, in the liver. What we eat obviously has sugar in it. But in addition to that, sugar is the only fuel source that our brains can use. So if we didn't eat any sugar at all, our bodies would still need to manufacture that. And that happens in the liver. So if you have too much sugar that hangs around and doesn't get into the cells, your cells send a signal to your brain saying, hey, we need more sugar. The liver is instructed to release more sugar, and so it kind of becomes a cascade and it causes more problems.
So is type 2 diabetes the diabetes you get later in life?
Yes.
Okay.
So type 1 diabetes is used to be referred to as juvenile onset.
Right.
And what that means is we think there's some sort of insult to the pancreas, maybe a viral infection or some autoimmune process that causes the pancreas to stop making insulin. So in that case, type 1 diabetes, you're required to take insulin, like you think of the shots and so forth. And without that, it wouldn't work. Type 2 diabetes, or it used to be called adult onset, but now type 2, is more what we think of, we see people in their 40s and 50s and 60s getting. And it's more, there is insulin there, that insulin just isn't being used properly, so the sugar levels start to build up.
And you're a family physician, so you're probably seeing these diabetic patients on a regular basis. Well, let's talk about pre-diabetic conditions and then type 2 diabetes. And is there a difference?
Yeah, there may be a matter of semantics. It's more like on a spectrum. So if you have somebody who has slightly elevated sugar, they're eating sugar that their body can't process, that would be sort of a pre-diabetes. Whereas when you get sugar levels that are too high, that's diabetes. The diagnostic criteria for that, you would have anytime your sugar level goes over 200, and I know the numbers may not mean a whole lot, but anytime your sugar level goes over 200, that's a diagnosis of diabetes. Or you have there's a test called an A1C, and an A1C is sort of a 3-month average sugar level. And if that level goes over 7, and now they're even making it a little more stringent, 6.5 by some criteria, that's a diagnosis of diabetes as well. So what I do with my patients is I ask them to, on their annual physicals, get a blood test. And if their blood sugar is elevated, or if they have a strong family history of that, we may check an A1C. And if it's above the normal range, which is below 6, if it's between 6 and 7, I'll tell them they have pre-diabetes, and we'll start talking about ways we can manage that to prevent diabetes onset in total. Whereas if it's beyond 7, the diagnosis is pretty much there. It's still worthwhile trying to control that and work on that, but that's kind of the difference. And so below 6 is normal. If you were to take an A1C from an average person who does not have diabetes, it'd be below 6. And people who have diabetes, it's often over 7 without treatment. Between 6 and 7 is sort of that gray zone where it's either a pre-diabetes or well-controlled diabetes that's known.
How would you get type 2 diabetes if you hadn't had it before and you're in your 40s? What are the kind of the causes to? Two questions. What are the causes and what am I feeling?
Symptoms?
Yeah. What are the symptoms that I get?
Well, probably the biggest cause.
I know what the biggest cause.
Yeah, exactly. This is the two words that every patient knows they're going to hear when they go to the doctor every single time, and that's right. Diet and exercise.
Right.
Right. I find it interesting. I tell my patients sometimes if you have high blood pressure or high cholesterol or diabetes, if you're depressed, if you're not sleeping well, I say, you know, I can give you a medicine for each one of those, or I have a magic medicine that works for all of them at the same time. And they get excited and say, what's that? And I say, exercise.
Yeah.
And they say, oh, and they realize, oh, that takes a lot of effort on my part. So usually diet and exercise, or in this case, lack thereof, is what leads to the propensity for diabetes. As we know that obesity is a big problem in the country right now, that's one that, as we see that go up, you can see diabetes follow that shortly thereafter. Exercise, if you want to think of sugar like gasoline for our bodies, in this case, we're not trying to conserve gas, we're trying to use gas. So the faster you drive the car, the more gas you use. Therefore, the more you exercise your body and rev up your metabolism, the more the sugar level is used. So, you know, high sugar diets, high processed food diets, high glycemic index diets, things like that are going to make you more prone to diabetes, and then the lack of exercise. So if we eat, you know, white rice, white potatoes, starchy foods, lots of sugar, and then sit around and do nothing, that sugar has to go somewhere, and the body has to churn out a lot of insulin to deal with that, and eventually the pancreas kind of gives up and says, I can't do this anymore, and that's when you...
And the symptoms of that would be...
Oh, symptoms of that.
Lethargy.
Yeah, you know, the hard part is at the beginning, oftentimes there aren't that many symptoms.
Uh-huh.
Usually if someone is having increased urination, increased thirst, those two often go together. Sometimes fatigue, as you mentioned, lethargy, sometimes poor wound healing, sometimes hands and feet will feel cold or even tingly. Some patients, unfortunately, by the time we diagnose it, it's later on, and they've had things like vision problems or even palpitations or things of that sort.
Right.
Is there any kind of odor to your breaths at times when you're in a diabetic situation?
In type 1, you can, and you may be referring to what's called ketoacidosis.
Okay.
And ketones, because sugar is the only fuel our brains can use, if we're not processing sugar effectively, the body starts looking for other sources, and one of those is breaking down proteins, which can lead to ketosis. When you get ketosis, you can get sort of a sugary, sweet smell to your breath, or like an acetone sort of smell, but usually in type 2 diabetes, you won't have that because there is insulin, it's just not being used effectively.
So the bottom line with type 2 diabetes is you have insulin, but just not enough to be effective to get the sugar or into the cells.
Sometimes it's not a matter of not having enough. And as a matter of fact, there are cases of people who have type 2 diabetes who have extra insulin, but the insulin's not working as well. So the example there would be, going back to that hallway analogy, if you have lots of students milling around and you have teachers in the hallway, but the doors are all locked.
Right.
If the doors are locked, the teachers can yell all they want, but the kids can't get to class. And that's sort of how it works with insulin resistance, which is that's treatable most effectively with exercise.
And type 2 basically is acquired then? Is that exactly
correct.
What you're talking about?
Correct.
And based on diet and exercise. So
right.
How do you treat this if this is a condition that you're seeing?
Well, the best way, of course, is, as I said, diet and exercise. And with that, I had one patient I can think of who we discussed, he had prediabetes, and he went on a crusade, and he has lost, I think, 80 pounds in the past year, and he's no longer on diabetes medicines. But for those who are unable to do that, for whatever reason, there's medications. And the medications can target many of those things I mentioned. They can target insulin sensitivity. They can target insulin production or release. They can target sugar absorption. So there's different ways to skin the cat, so to speak.
We are talking to Dr. David Lindstrom from Western Washington Medical Group, and we're talking about diabetes. Do you find a bigger outbreak? A lot of people getting diabetes more today than, say, maybe 10 years ago?
Most definitely.
Yeah?
Most definitely. You think back, it's interesting, I did some research a while back on obesity when this was coming up, and I realized what I found was that, and this was in 2001 I did this, that relative to our ancestors of 50 to 100 years prior, we weren't eating, on average, that many more calories,
mm-hmm.
So while it'd be easy to blame fast food as the the culprit.
Right.
The difference was that while our ancestors were eating 2,000 or 2,500 calories a day, they were walking and working everywhere. Whereas you think about many of us, you wake up, you walk to your garage, get in your car, drive to the parking garage, get in the elevator, go to your office, sit at a desk for 8 hours, get back in the elevator, go back down, and we never move. We have to make time to exercise. I often wonder how our ancestors would look at that and think, you have to make time to exercise? That's what we do all day.
Right.
But that's really the problem. And so I think as we see sedentary lifestyles and more processed foods, we're going to continue to see this. As a matter of fact, sadly, I can remember having a patient who was 16 who had type 2 diabetes.
Wow.
He was 300 pounds.
Oh, yeah.
Obesity. Yeah. So if you have too much sugar in your blood system or stream, what is the problem there? I mean, it seems like all the complications with type 2 diabetes lead to circulatory problems and wound healing. Talk about that.
Well, it's sort of like sugar in the gas tank, if you will. That's probably the simplest way to put it. If you took sugar and put it in your car's gas tank, it would just gum up everything. And that's sort of what sugar in our bloodstream does. It can affect the eyes. It can affect nerves. It can affect the kidneys. It can affect circulation. So exactly like you mentioned, Shannon, you'll have patients who have poor circulation, which leads to wounds that don't heal and ultimately amputations. You have increased sugar levels causing problems in the retina, which leads to blindness. I think last I remember reading, the diabetic retinopathy was the leading cause of blindness in the United States. The other issues with nerve problems, no sensation, so you can have
neuropathies,
exactly, and that's very common in the feet. That can be a problem. Diabetes also contributes dramatically to heart disease. There was an interesting study I read not too long ago that said if you had two groups of people, those who have had heart attacks before and those who have not, if you had diabetics in both those populations, obviously those who are at greatest risk for a subsequent heart attack were those who have had one and are diabetic. And those who have the lowest risk of a subsequent heart attack were those who don't have diabetes and have never had a heart attack. But curiously, those who are at highest risk among those two other populations, those who have diabetes but have never had a heart attack, or those who have already had a heart attack but don't have diabetes, those who have diabetes and never had a heart attack were at greater risk.
Interesting.
So the microvascular, or even the macrovascular, meaning the blockages in the arteries and so forth, with diabetes is so severe that we treat patients with diabetes as if they have heart disease because they're at that high of a risk to have a heart attack.
So basically what you're saying is all that sugar in your bloodstream clogs those capillary vessels, depleting that tissue of oxygen and causing it to be impaired.
That's definitely part of it. I'm sure there are other reasons that a biochemist or an endocrinologist could explain to you in more detail, but basically that's it. You have capillaries, you think about the viscosity of the blood as it moves through capillaries and through vessels and so forth, and if you have sugar in there, it's going to be more syrupy, it's going to get clogged, and so oxygen transfer and waste elimination and so forth is going to be impaired. Sugar levels also change osmolality, which is the concentration and so forth, so it's going to mess up everything.
And it's hereditary too, right?
It can be. The question,
some kinds of...
The question there, of course, is sort of a nature-nurture situation.
Right.
So if you have someone who was born to diabetic parents, but he has an awakening and doesn't live the life they lived,
right,
would he get it? I don't know that that's the case. Sort of like smokers who live in a smoking household, they're probably more prone to follow the path of their parents.
It seems like every, when I go to the doctor and whatever I fill out, they always ask, do you have anybody in your family who has a diabetes or heart disease, that kind of stuff?
Sure.
So I'm guessing, because I actually, my mom and my sister have type 2 diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
I had an aunt that had juvenile diabetes.
Right,
so
right.
I guess it's different, hereditary that way. Right?
There is. Yeah. And it's difficult to tease out how much of it is hereditary versus how much is if you grow up in a household where people eat and live in a way that predisposes them to diabetes,
right,
the children are probably going to fall under that same type of lifestyle, although those who break away may not be subject to that.
Well, the nice thing about all this discussion is type 2 diabetes can be treated.
Absolutely.
And I guess the question, can it be reversed? I've actually heard people say, my diabetes has gone away.
Well, that's, yeah.
But I don't, I'm not sure. I want to make sure. Does actually diabetes go away, or does the weight loss and diet actually just alleviate sugar in the system?
Well, that's a great question. And I don't know that I can say, I'm not sure I can give you a definitive answer. But what I can tell you is this. I've had patients where their A1C was very high, 9 or 10. So that's an average sugar level of 240 plus.
Pretty high.
Very high. And with exercise, as I mentioned, this man in my practice who lost 80 pounds and cut out soda and cut out processed food and cut out fast food, and his A1C, I don't remember the exact number, but it dropped significantly. So now he's no longer on medications, so one could argue, does he have diabetes, or does he have diabetes that he just controls so well with diet and exercise and lifestyle changes that he doesn't have it anymore? And I think what I tell my what I would tell my patients in that situation is, I would still consider yourself as having diabetes, but it's in remission.
Okay.
It's under very good control. And as long as you continue to live your life in that way, we'll be able to avoid medications and we'll be able to avoid complications. All the complications we talked about, like eyes and nerves and so forth, come with uncontrolled sugars.
Right.
So as long as those sugars are controlled, one could argue that your diabetes is in remission, or perhaps it's cured.
Well, and people listening out there should realize that this is important to control it, because as a physical therapist, I've seen amputations from diabetes, and it's not, and it can be prevented.
Well, I always think too, before we're running out of time, but diabetes, I always think of you check your blood, you like prick your finger,
yeah.
And then you give yourself insulin. Does that happen every case of diabetes?
No. As a matter of fact, nowadays with type 1,
right.
But with type 2 diabetes, we actually there are a lot of medications, oral medications, and things that we can do. Well, you don't have to give yourself insulin. You'd still probably check your sugars on your finger. That would be once a day, twice a day, depending on how well controlled you were. But no, you don't have to do insulin initially. You can go to oral pills. It's interesting. I remember my grandmother had diabetes, and she lived into her 90s and did fine. It had no amputations, no blindness, nothing like that. So growing up, I didn't even know she had diabetes until one Christmas. She didn't eat some of the cheesecake she'd made for us as a dessert. And I asked her why, and she said, I have diabetes. And I said, what's that? She said, well, it's a disease where you can't eat a lot of sugar. So until I got to medical school, I didn't think diabetes was a big deal.
Yeah.
Then I get to medical school, and everyone says, oh, diabetes is horrible. It's really, really bad. And in my residency, I actually had a patient who died at 29 because he refused to take care of his diabetes. In the ICU, while we had him on an insulin drip, his friends would sneak him in Snickers bars, and we'd find wrappers in the garbage.
Wow.
And so at 29, he went blind, he had his foot amputated, his kidney shut down, and ultimately, he died because he refused to take care of it. So I think you're right, Shannon. It's crucial for people to realize that if their experience with diabetes is like that young man, then no, it's not a death sentence. But if their experience is like me with my grandmother, you have to recognize it is serious, and it's how well you take care of it.
And the neat thing, in today's world, there's so many opportunities for education. I mean, not only from your family physician, but I think the Diabetic Association of America has a great website. You can go on support groups, et cetera.
I had an aunt, I went through the same thing. My aunt had diabetes when I was, growing up when I was a kid, and it was just no big deal. And I thought again, that diabetes was nothing. As she got older, that's when she had to have her, amputation. She started going blind, and eventually she died in her 70s of it. So, I went through the same exact thing.
Right.
So, and especially once you get to be my age, you become more aware of diabetes and exercise,
in today's
and diet
world,
and exercise.
Right.
And all that kind of
not
stuff.
Only that, it's just the childhood obesity and the increased incidence of type 2 diabetes in kids is kind of scary.
And the other big challenge, I think, is that healthy food is harder to get. And more people are looking at cheap food. And as I tell patients this, they'll say, well, doctor, it's expensive to eat healthy. And I say, well, that's more the real price. What happens now is you're getting falsely depreciated food if you buy, fast food or garbage food, because you may pay less now, but you'll pay more later.
Right.
Whereas if you eat healthfully now, it's a little more expensive, but you're not going to run into these problems we're talking about.
It is work eating healthy. And it does cost more, but when it all comes down to it, it kind of evens out on how much you would pay to go out to dinner and, get takeout and all that kind of stuff.
Right. And so we end up paying for the convenience.
Right.
The challenge.
Totally. Great stuff. Thanks so much for being with us. November is National Diabetes Awareness Month. You can go online and Google diabetes, and there's all kinds of information about it. Dr. David Lindstrom from Western Washington Medical Group, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
It's Health Matters with Maury and Shannon. We're going to be right back right after this on Fox Sports 1380.